as if he reached through the television set right into my brain. He said, if you are not producing and taking risks on a daily basis, you're dying on the vine.
Hello and welcome to Self Talk. I'm Rachel Astarte. Today, my guest is Dan Ruth. He is an actor, a writer, a director, and storyteller who has called New York City his home since 1993. After working for years in the New York City restaurant and bar industry, Dan has returned to his performance career with the autobiographical A Life Behind Bars, his latest biting and funny original solo theatrical work that focuses on the soul-sucking restaurant and service industries. I just love that intro because I just want to get right into it. Dan, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Rachel. It's been a hot second since I saw you last.
Right. So full disclosure, I first met Dan when he was a bartender at Brooklyn Ale House in Brooklyn, and he served me. So it's lovely to be able to sit with you again after all these years. I know. And now both of us don't drink anymore. So now we have something else to do.
It's all seltzer from here.
It is. Oh, seriously. That's my treat at the end of the day.
Have a seltzer.
Yes. With ice. So we'll calm it down. So Dan, I'd love for you to start us off a little bit with telling us about the journey that, and I know this is a big ask, but somehow, like, how did you get to A Life Behind Bars? How did you get to this piece of work? And you can start it wherever, with your birth or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, I come from a Roman Catholic background, German Catholic, more specific, lots of drinking, lots of anger, lots of, missteps. And a lot of, not very nice times. And, that really got me off on the wrong path. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that for one segment of it, I kind of discovered, early on that like Catholicism was not for me. Mm. But I kind of just, and so, yes, I think to answer your question, partly is that when you're on a path and you don't know where you're going, skip that. You're not on a path. You don't know where you're going. There is no path. Mm. You're lost. And you're reaching for this and that and this and that and trying to fit in or trying to get on the last boat before it leaves the harbor. Everything's confusing. And so I kind of found myself somewhere around the 2000 era, almost self-admittedly, completely spiritually bankrupt, because I didn't have a spiritual base in anything. So it just kind of got worse. I got a DUI in 93 in Delaware and literally just said, well, I'm moving to New York, so I don't need to drive anymore. So to hell with all you people. And like everything back then, it's all your fault, but I'm going to move to New York. And I did. I moved to New York without doing any research, without knowing anything. I think I left with the money in my pocket and three bags of stuff and a box. And I ended up at Penn Station, got robbed the night I moved here, moved to New York, stupidly on my way to the cab. And, that's the beginning of the journey to New York. And so when you land in the city where you don't have to drive, when you start living in the city where you can be annihilated 24/7 and no one blinks at you, that was the beginning of the end, really, because for years and years and years, I was a functioning alcoholic, just, drinking all the time, making really poor choices. And toward the end, the doors started opening up, the path started appearing, and that was around 2006 when I got sober. Mm-hmm. So the weird, interesting thing about this, and I'm not sure if your listenership knows, but I mean, I left New York in 2021, February. Mm-hmm. My mother had injured herself during the pandemic, and I was basically stuck looking out my window for a couple of months, and that, you know, and all this madness. And I said, it's time. Let's just call this a day. Let's move on. Let's open up another door. Let's walk through that door. This one is clearly shutting. So I decided to start giving back. I know that may sound pat to many people, but that's the only way I can explain it. I'm like, you know what? I've lived in this apartment for 22 years. Give it back. Giving, you know, just start letting things go.
Yeah.
Lightening the load and all the other stuff. So that led me to where I am right now, which is in Los Angeles, where I'm planning, still testing the waters for a move here. But the funny part about the question and the answer is 28 years in New York. 14 of those years were drunk and making stupid choices. 14 of them were being sober and gearing towards what I have written. I basically ended up manifesting, which was a life behind bars, which is like almost like a trophy now. I can basically perform the show. And the cool part about it also is that it's like a, it is a time, it's a period piece now, because you know as well as I do that New York City changes and morphs every day. Right. And you know, it depends on what era you get it in. And this was the era that this, the era that this show lives in is the era that's not on camera. It's not, I know, and the social media wasn't around.
Right.
Literally by 2012. Maybe it would be around when I met you, 12 to 13, something like that.
I met you in about 2008.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Earlier than that. Well, I mean, there were no such things as like, hi, can I have a discount on that? You know, the phone in your face thing.
Oh, God.
So this is all it's mostly pre-Giuliani into my complete blackout period, which was post-Giuliani. It was like Bloomberg era. But that's basically the journey. And the fact that the synchrony of that 28 years is just fascinating to me. I'm like, wow. And so, talk about making the right choices. And I think I did make the right choice. And the thing about the pandemic is, I don't know if this is true for you, but it was an amazing time for me because it gave me time to just stop.
Yes.
Oh my God, the vitriol and the Trump and the news and it just I shut it all off. And I hadn't really watched the news since Donald Trump was elected in 2016. I opted out of that. I chose not to poison myself with that on a daily basis. And this was the final straw. And so I entered a DUI class in 2020 through the state of Delaware. And through an outreach program in Brooklyn. So during the madness of the summer of 2020, I had access to 3.5 months of a therapist, 3.5 months of a DUI counselor, and 3.5 months with a vocational counselor trying to get me to manifest other things in other areas and directions. So it was such an amazing time for me to go, Dan, just what else might be out there? And don't slam any doors shut. Just what's there? And so it was an amazing experience for me to be able to go, my time here is done. To be able to actually make the cognitive decision to go, you know, it's time to move on. Let us plan this.
Yeah. I think the don't slam any doors shut is a really telling statement, just about that awareness that, okay, this whole thing isn't working for me. And I don't really know what else will, but I'm not going to shut any doors. I'm just going to, you know, be awake, be aware, see what happens. And so I'm curious. So you've been an actor, you've been a performer, and that kind of got put on hold for a while.
That's a way of putting it. Yeah.
I was an actor too. And that's the best way to put it. You know, this just, you know, other things were going on.
Just do your little skit.
Yeah. I literally did little skits. I had a comedic theater company. But the point is that somehow that got put on hold for whatever reason, but you got called back to your art. And I wanted to talk about that for a little minute. Did you miss it when you weren't doing it, or were you doing it sporadically, or what was going on for you?
I can't say miss it, because again, like moving to New York with no planning, no pre-planning, I didn't know what to expect. And yes, when you come from being a big fish in a small pond, because I was relocating from Richmond, Virginia, where I was a star and all these other things like that were going on. They were wonderful. But no one cares when you get to a place where no one knows who you are, right, and you have to start all over again. And however, that's different now. Proving yourself is different in 2022 mm-hmm. than it was back in 93. Yeah. So I will just really quickly say that the environment of 93 theater in New York,
right,
the environment was pretty, I don't think brutal is a, it's not a far-fetched term. Mm-hmm. It's very throw you under the bus. People, I mean, just brutal. I mean, yep. Everyone was just fighting and struggling and struggling and fighting and fighting and struggling.
Yep.
And that really was a turnoff. That was a real, like, I wasn't expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I was expecting, but I was not expecting that. So I did a one-man show called White Noise that I'd been working on in Philadelphia. I had that produced, and then I got involved with a comedy troupe called Planet Q, which was mm-hmm. one of New York's premier queer comedy troupes back in the day. Mm-hmm. Then I just kind of stopped performing altogether. I lost the connect. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, I was auditioning for a production of Rocky Horror Picture Show. Or the Rocky Horror Show. Mm-hmm. And I was auditioning for Frankenfurter. And I don't know what went wrong in my brain, but I literally brought a chair in. They started playing the music. I'm like up there on the chair, and I'm just, you know, sweet transvestite, doing the whole thing. But then something snapped in me, Rachel. And next thing I know, the music's still playing. I got off the chair, folded the chair, walked the chair to the end of the room, put it against the wall, and walked out of the room.
Wow.
And I thought, that's telling. I wanted to get out of there so fast. And so I don't know where that came from, but it really did start this, why am I here? Mm. What the heck's going on? I'll just go have a drink and I'll figure it out. Mm. So that just kept spiraling out of control. But what happened was in 2014, flash forward to the closing of the Brooklyn Ale House.
Yes.
I lived around the corner from.
Oh, right.
Not necessarily the best thing in the world to live around the corner from where you were. I'm just saying. It was time to close the bar, and I was in negotiations, and all kinds of things were going on. And I was sitting up in my room, in my apartment, and cowering, you know, from this monster around the corner.
Mm.
And I was watching this show. It's a docudrama called The Men Who Built America. Mm-hmm. And I know if you've ever seen it, but it's about Carnegie and Rockefeller and all of the big industrialists who hated each other's guts with a passion, but they built our society to what we know, or our country to what we know it today. And in that show, there was an entrepreneur. I don't remember his name. He was like one of the more contemporary entrepreneurs. And he said, as if he reached through the television set right into my brain, he said, if you are not producing and taking risks on a daily basis, you're dying on the vine.
Mm.
And I sat there in my chair and I said, Dan, you're dying on the vine. So that's when I opened up my computer and I found a solo performance class given by David Drake, who's an Obie Award-winning playwright and solo performer for his show, The Night Larry Kramer Kissed Me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, raise the damn money and get into that class. And I did, and I did. And it was an absolute amazing experience because David Drake introduced me, or rather reintroduced me, to the world of safe space.
Mm.
And as a performer, as an artist, to know that you're in a group of people who are not going to be criticizing you, snapping at you, yelling at you, making you feel and belittling you, making you feel horrible. And I don't know if that was a result of the Obama era. I don't know what that was, but it just seemed that it was a beautiful fit and allowed me to get rid of the crap, to not be afraid of the crap, to just dispel it from my life and then move on with what did work. And it's great when you have someone in the room going, this worked and here's why.
Right.
You know, and so I'm a really good learner. I mean, I'm a good outpatient and I'm a good learner, but I'm like, I want to know how I can get back. So he got me back on the track. He got me back on the track to performing. And then I think it was a couple of months later after I did, there was a small brief show that we did at the Abram Center in New York, where I did the 20 minutes that I wrote, which have all ended up in my show, by the way. Okay. And I was doing an audition for a Broadway producer. And I asked my acting teacher, I said, can I do my monologue that I wrote for him? And he's like, well, we were working on a monologue from Burn This. And he's like, do the Burn This monologue, but save it for a second if he wants to see it. And I'm like, okay. So I did the first monologue for this guy and he was really chatty, really nice. And he was like, do your second monologue. So I got a chance to do the part of my show, which is basically a retelling of The Hunger, the film, the vampire film.
The Hunger. I love that movie.
So many people don't even know what it is, but
it's brilliant. It's
a gay icon film. Come on, everybody.
Yeah, gay icon film. Hell. So because it's direct address to the audience, I couldn't help but I looked right at him and he was like grinning, like the grin couldn't have been wider. And I'm like, he's digging the shit out of this. Like, mm-hmm. So afterward, he was just very, very, very positive on it. Mm-hmm. And so I left that room going, Dan, you need to finish this damn show.
Nice.
So I contacted my friend Tanya Moberly, who is a director and dear friend of mine for a very long time, and said, Tanya, would you be interested in directing this show that I'm working on? And she said, Dan, I've been waiting for this phone call.
Wow.
So that's the beginning of it. And it all started from there. And it's been blooming and blossoming and changing ever since.
So. Yeah. And that's what's so wonderful about it, too, is that, you know, you had that moment of inspiration. Right. You could have been watching that documentary and just it could have gone right over your head. But there you were receptive and hearing this message that as though it were specifically to you, which, of course, in many ways it was.
Boy, who knew the word risk would be so positive?
Right.
It is a positive word.
Yeah.
Risk. I mean, take a risk. I mean, sure, if you want to do the litany of lists of like, what are the good aspects of this? What are the bad aspects of this? But like, if it's, I mean, really putting your ass on stage in front of, you know, I mean, I opened the show at Dixon Place on my birthday, 2015, in front of 120 people. We oversold the show. And I describe it as a shamanistic experience because I don't remember the performance at all. Only things I remember from the performance were the one or two times where I kind of looked out and going, oh my God, they're really digging this. Oh fuck, where am I? And then you dive back under that veneer. Mm. But there's just something amazing about being able to say that was a risk.
Yeah.
Huge risk. In fact, the night of that show, I had an argument. I had a fight with Tanya backstage because I wanted my friend, Jean Yannis, my dear friend, to be on book for me. And she's like, no, you know, the show, yada, yada, your way through it. No, no, no. And I'm like, but I'm the producer. She's like, and I'm your director and I'm your friend. I said, no, and she slammed the door. So I'm like, damn it. I'm so grateful she did that, Rachel, because if I had had him on book and if I went up one time, I would have been scattered. It would have been, it would have flustered
You've
me.
Been waiting.
It would have been a nightmare. A disaster. Mm-hmm. So it's choices within the moment that are so important, you know.
Yeah.
Making, you know, just making the right choices of taking a risk. Don't have anyone. Go free fly. Go free fall for a little bit. That's what it is.
Right.
And I'm still in a free fall.
Yeah, you're going to land. I mean, I love too that you're not telling this story from your $12 million house in the hills. You're saying, you know, maybe I'm going to move back to L. I don't know. I'm in transition. This is what's going on right now. And that's okay too. There's a solidity in the adventure too.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's what it was. And it's funny too, because like, be careful what you wish for, because I was like, I want new perspectives. I want new ways. Boy, am I getting them.
Yeah.
In spades, you know, and so you never know what the world is going to give you. So even last year, when I moved back and I got my driver's license back after that DUI class,
congratulations.
I got my car, thank you. And I just fell in love with driving, you know, mm-hmm. and that's really difficult for a lot of people to grasp. I'm like, why? I mean, I have freedom now. I can go wherever the hell I want. And so I got in my car and I drove across country for the first time. And I went through what I would call the spiritual center of the country, which is South Dakota into Utah.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, I mean, my God, the Utah alone, I don't know. It's very difficult to explain. There some amazing spiritual things happened to me on the road. And because I'd never been to any of these places before. Mm-hmm. So I went camping in Valley of the Gods, Utah, which is a 17-mile stretch off-road Bureau of Land Management. So you can camp there.
Right. And,
I'm saving that story for my next show, but some wild, when there are spirits surrounding you and you cannot negate them, mm-hmm. It's an eye opener and it's an amazing, oh, yeah. It is an amazing thing all through Monument Valley, all through all that whole area, man, it's overwhelming the emotion and the just, I it's hard to describe, but,
yeah. Oh, I'll have to have you back because we'll have to just talk about the spirituality aspect of the journey too, because, oh, wow, that's amazing. Yeah,
and I guess we'll come full circle with that one too, is that, I mean, in 2015, after the Ale House closed, I went to the Grand Canyon because I needed space. I mean, mm-hmm. I really needed space. And so I took that awful spirit flight to Vegas. And because I used Vegas as my hub to see the Grand Canyon. And so the day of our tour, I got on the bus and we first went to the Hoover Dam and I got out and I'm like, there's nothing in this lake. Mm. It was really disturbing to me.
Yeah.
It really kind of, you know, so I bought a little thing of gold Flex and a little bottle of silver Flex that I still have at home. And, but I got on the bus going, this is just really odd that there's like no water in Lake Mead. So then the trip was beautiful, but I wanted more. I wanted more. I was on the bus and they're showing movies. I'm like, I want to be out there. I'm looking out the window. Like, I want to walk. I want to hike. I want to be out there. And so that wasn't quite there yet. So anyway, on the way back from the Grand Canyon, our tour guide told us it was the last, that day was the last tour that his company was going to do of the Hoover Dam.
Wow.
Because it was just so underwhelming. And so when I got back to New York, it's when I started reading about Sao Paulo, Brazil was also in a horrible drought. I think they still are, but horrible drought situation. And I was leaving the apartment of my friend, Liz Santonis, who I think you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was late at night, around 11 o'clock. And I was walking through Greenpoint and I looked up and I heard this whirling, wivering sound, I'm like, what is that? And I look up and there was this, what are they called?
Drone. Yeah, it's a drone.
Hovering above this apartment building. And I'm like, where am I? What the hell? What's going on? I mean, and I just said, I need a grounded nature spirituality. Mm-hmm. This is what I need. I need a nature spirit. I need to start giving reverence to the earth. I need to be grounded. That's my problem. I'm not grounded. Mm. So that was the start of my spiritual awakening. And and for years I've identified as a pagan, but a lot of times people are like, ew, that's such a terrible term. I'm like, whatever. If you don't identify with that, then you can identify with whatever you want. But paganism has been an unbelievable eye-opener as to the amazing construct that has been here for millions and millions and millions of years. So when I would tell people about going to Monument Valley and they would say things like, oh, I just look at that and I see those bonanza reruns. I'm like, really? I see what the earth looked like when it was underwater millions of years ago. That's what I see.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
To have the gift to be on this planet for the small blip that we're on, I do think that what's missing and what is destroying the society is our lack of being able to be present.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And to be able to understand. Yeah. And to be able to understand that everything is connected and that we are all like the spirit world or the energies world, you know, we're all vibrating energy. That's what we are, vibrating light. That's what we all are. Everything, the tree outside my window, this plant back here, the flame that's there, you know, my glass of water. Mm-hmm. That's what we are. So when we realize that, we never really feel alone in the world.
That is the huge fact. It's a huge fact. And it allowed me to walk down a darker path when there was no light, knowing that there would be a light at the end of the tunnel. And I've had people say that about my show, which has been the one of the best things people have said to me. It was like, I knew you were going to take me to a really dark place, but I trusted you'd get me back safely. Yeah. And I do.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, when they choose to go down that path towards the end of my show, it's a real roller coaster. But right. it needs to be said. And the message of the show is you can go down a lot of dark paths. You can have a lot of very terrible things happen to you, but you are the power that you need to return to where you need to be.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So that's and important. You do this in the show through different characters that you portray. So just so the people have an idea when they come see the show, what are they going to be treated to?
A comedy.
A comedy that has a little darkness.
It's a very dark comedy. So if dark comedy is your thing, please come see it.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that's a little difficult to get people to, you know, feel comfortable with. It's like, you know, it does deal with alcoholism. It deals with a struggling person in the world, but also my observations, again, of a New York that doesn't exist anymore. Right. And I bring in even more stories. I talk about the Westies. I talk about, you know, when celebrities were free to walk the streets without the hindrance of a public armed with cell phones and cameras. Mm-hmm. You know, like you could go into any bar in Hell's Kitchen and there would be, you know, Anne Bancroft and Liza Minnelli. They were there in public. They wanted it. They reveled in that attention.
Right.
You know, so many parts of the story don't exist anymore. But yeah, that's the thing about the show that you're going to be shown a piece of New York City that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So this is, and I say it early on in the show, it's like, this show's just a rocks glass full of my 20 years. Cause there's, you know, there's no way on earth I could fit all the stories into one show. And that's, right. you know, why I'm still touring with other ideas about it, but you know, they're going to be transported into another world. And that I think is the cool part. When I was in Pittsburgh in 2019, right before the pandemic started, a reviewer came and gave me the review that I've been waiting for 6 years, which was, you will leave this show believing you saw multiple actors on the stage, multiple set changes, costume changes, when in fact, it's just one person standing on a stage with a bar towel.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So there, the tickets are, well, the show is October 14th and 15th. Tickets are on sale. This is, the show is A Life Behind Bars. It's going to be at the Rustic Theater in Idlewild, California. For
beautiful
those people
place.
Who are listening, they're on sale
if
now.
In Los Angeles, if you're in Palm Springs, if you're anywhere near there, just take the drive and take the trip with me. Because if you're hemming and hawing and not sure, it's a blast. It's a lot of fun, and you will leave hopefully a little bit more uplifted. You know,
right? And people can get tickets through what, Instagram?
TheRusticTheater.com.
Okay.
You can go to their website directly to the calendar and they can find A Life Behind Bars.
Okay.
They can also go to my website, www.danruth.com. And then there they can find the ticket link on the very top of the website.
Beautiful. And if people want to follow Dan on Instagram, he's at Dan Ruth Official.
Yes.
And I am a follower. So I suggest you become one too. Dan, thank you so much for being on Self Talk. I'm so excited for you. And I've been following your journey, you know, since Ale House closed and, you know, and we've been social media friends, but I'm glad to talk to you again and see your lovely face. And I'm so excited for the success of your show and future shows to come.
Thank you. Thank you. There will be many.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Rachel. Good seeing you again.